Jesse Neeland is a queer and non-binary writer, speaker, and body neutrality coach. On June 6th, their book, Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues, was published. This is Jesse's second time on Sober Sex, and we are so happy to welcome them back.
Creativity, authenticity, body autonomy, mental health, sexuality, gender identity, recovery, got a spiritual growth. Sexuality, gender identity, recovery, got a spiritual growth. Sober sex, you'll never get bored. Sober sex, all of this and more. Sober sex, you'll never get bored. Sober sex, all of this and more.
So nice to see you.
Yeah.
Is it morning where you are or midday?
Noon. Midday. Lovely.
Well, yeah. Happy afternoon.
Me too.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm visiting my partner's parents in Miami right now, so.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm like, good. Aloha.
Wait, where are you?
I'm in like the French countryside.
Oh, neat.
Yes. Since we last spoke, relocated to the forests and the fields.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. It's been really helpful, actually, I think, for some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today, just because there's like no reflective surfaces. So I have no like feedback on my body to have feelings about.
Oh,
other than like how I feel in it, which is really nice.
Yeah.
To begin, what are your pronouns?
I use they, them.
Awesome. And what is your experience of gender today?
Oh, what a lovely question today. I don't really like reflect on it on a day-to-day basis generally, but I would say most days I sort of feel like I fit pretty much in the middle of the binary somewhere. I think that being in Miami, it's like super hot here. And so I have a little bit more of like femme summer clothing. So maybe leaning that way just a little.
That's cool. Yeah. It's been so interesting to like ask people kind of what that is, because I feel like we don't get to like investigate that or have curiosity around it or aren't necessarily invited to that often. So
totally.
It's funny though, because like I do think it is very seasonal and everybody in summer is like, I'm feeling femme.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. How about you? What are your pronouns and identity today?
She, her.
Okay.
And that's interesting. I feel like today it feels kind of innocuous. Like it's the way, and I'm actually curious about this for you, because like the way I identify it just is kind of like, I don't know, like a addendum. Like it doesn't really take that much space in my day-to-day, especially because like since moving to France I often get misgendered constantly. Like I could be wearing like a full face and like at the airport people
really
would be like, sir. Yeah, it's wild.
Oh, that's interesting.
But it doesn't bother me. It like used to feel kind of just like, really, like what vibe am I giving off? Like heavy mask vibes, apparently. Like, because I felt kind of like stranger in a strange land since moving here about a decade ago, like, it's kind of, I think it becomes more pronounced when I'm like in a culture that I can actually read, like the US, and then it's a little bit more kind of like alarming, but it's invisible. It feels invisible when I'm, because I can't read people's reactions to me.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's like,
attuned to people's judgments and stuff.
Well,
in French.
Or like I'm not like, because here, you know, in New York or even in Los Angeles, people make eye contact and kind of like give you like a once over. Mm. And here they avoid eye contact. Eye contact is like a vulgar or like very aggressive.
Oh, thing. Interesting.
Or like an intimate thing.
Yeah.
So now when people make eye contact, it's like it's so fucking intense that it's kind of unbearable. It's like,
Oh, wow.
So I think part of that's it too, that like if you feel invisible, then it's like easier to kind of forget a lot of this stuff.
Interesting.
Emma, thank you for asking. Yeah. I know that last time we spoke, and actually this is kind of like relates to the like reflective surfaces issue, but like you were, last time we spoke, I think you were in the middle of like the move kind of in from New York, I believe, to Asheville.
And probably from LA then.
Yeah. Or LA. Yeah. So mm-hmm. how has it been like living somewhere that's like not a major metropolis necessarily, like New York or Los Angeles?
There are some major upsides, one of which is I'm by family now, so I spend a lot of time with my family. And because we grew up upstate New York, and I was like, I'm never going to go back to those kind of winters, like I just sort of figured, well, I guess I never get to live near family anymore, you know? So that's been a real treat, something I didn't expect. My partner and I have a house, so it's also kind of cool. It's the first time I've ever really put down roots anywhere, and that was something I was really, really craving. So that's kind of a like a cool new experience.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But there's a lot about it, too, that I think, like, Asheville's very cool. It's very vibrant. There's a lot to do
like
that
college
I haven't.
Town, right?
No, it's like a like an arts and hippie town.
Okay, cool.
but it's big enough that there's plenty to do that I haven't done. I think I just don't have like the sort of cool associations with it that I did when I lived other places that kind of made me go into like explorer and adventurer mode. I'm like, I'm in New York City. This is the coolest place in the world. I'm in Los Angeles. It's so cool that I'm here. When I would travel, it'd be like, I'm in Thailand. I want to, you know, go out and sort of gather stories here. And I don't think I do that in Asheville. And I'm not sure if that's just like an internal block or what. We also moved there during the pandemic. Yeah, so it's a little bit harder. Of like, yeah. Things are a little different energetically. So,
it reminds me of that like Wayne's World when they're like, aloha, we're in Hawaii. And then they're like, hi, we're in Delaware. It's like, it's not actually that, but it's like, it's funny that there's like.
That is kind of the energy I think I brought into it. So we've been there like 2 years now, and I'm just starting to try to adopt the adventure mentality and build community and kind of go into it from that place. Because it is a cool place. It's not a place that was ever on my radar, you know?
Yeah, totally. I totally know. Now I'm living in a Fraser with population of 300.
Right.
And I do wonder also, like, because, like, I know that leaving kind of major city centers, because I, too, had been, like, New York, Los Angeles, and Paris, like, mm-hmm. that those actually, like, it's been healing for my body image stuff to be somewhere that wasn't quite as, like, aesthetically forward necessarily, or obsessed, rather, would be maybe a better word. And I wonder if that's what, if you have a different relationship with your body image stuff, like being in a place that's not New York or LA.
I think that because by the time I moved here, I was already, like, pretty neutral. Yeah, I don't know that that necessarily plays a role, but I will say it's a super queer city. Like, because of that, I think exploring my gender identity and expression and those kinds of things have felt very supported. Although they definitely would have been supported in New York. I don't actually know in LA because I think I wasn't there long enough to really figure it out. But I do think, like, obviously it's a huge place. You can totally find your queer pockets.
Sure.
But it also does have that, like, femme ideal that's a little bit more present there.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. And, like, because I think, again, like, because it's a hot place, that like that is kind of exacerbated because people are like, bikini body.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Oh, God. So, you know, I guess I should have led with this, but congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
That's a big deal. And I think since we last spoke, you launched your own podcast, which for listeners, This Is Not About Your Body is an amazing podcast. And I was lucky enough to partake in your Authentic Body Confidence program. And this was kind of, if I'm not mistaken, like beta testing some of the ideas that were going to be in the book. And can you talk a little bit about the body image avatars and how you kind of arrived at this model of working towards body neutrality? Because I think it was so helpful to kind of think about, like, what is the need that my strategy around, you know, having a perfect body or whatever, or my obsession was serving.
Yeah. So the body image avatars are part of the system that I came up with for essentially going from like body image suffering, which is where your body image issues have a lot of power over your, you know, your mood, your sense of confidence or worth or self-esteem or day or like lifestyle choices, all of these things, to a place where they just don't really have a big impact anywhere. They don't have a lot of power. And so in order to strip your appearance and your body of that power, I was noticing among my, you know, coaching client practice that everybody had something going on underneath that was basically giving their body an inappropriate amount of power. And so by categorizing those, I broke them down into four like super major broad patterns of the ways in which we give our bodies an inappropriate amount of power. And then I turned each one of those into like a sort of personified representation that I called the body image avatars. So there's four of them. And essentially, like, one of the main purposes of them existing as part of this plan is to normalize what you're going through, because so many people experience body image issues in like an isolated bubble where they feel like it's just them.
Totally.
And so,
or that they assume it's like a reality, which I think is also really interesting, that it's kind of like a full paradigm of existence that like, yeah, this is fact. You know,
it's fact. Like, and also it's like a character flaw. I feel like a lot of people would come to me and be like, I don't know why I'm still struggling with this. Like, I know nobody cares about, you know, a couple pounds up or down, but like, I can't stop obsessing over it. So I really wanted to help normalize that. So when people read themselves in the avatars, it immediately erases some of that shame and helps people feel like, okay, I'm not alone and I make sense. And then the next piece of it is, because of the rest of the process that I created, which I call the body neutrality blueprint, it's like the whole system that the book outlines from beginning to end for moving towards body neutrality. The next step is to get really specific about what exactly the purpose, like the underlying, usually subconscious purpose of your body image issues are. By starting with the avatars, you kind of know where to start digging. It doesn't give you the ultimate answer. It doesn't tell you, you know, exactly what to do, but it gives you an understanding of where you might be, like to locate yourself on this really broad, vast map of what could be going on when it comes to why your body has so much power over you.
Totally. And I think also that it was really interesting in kind of doing that work to start to see I really identified in this one area. And then it kind of, as I dug deeper, like, it was like, oh no, there's a city under the city. Like,
yeah,
a lot of the stuff was kind of coming up in a lot of different areas. And so to kind of have also compassion that it's like, this is like, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's this idea of like character defects that can be reframed actually as like creative adjustments. Like, this is the behaviors that you started to act out in order to survive and in not ideal circumstances. Like, if you could not meet your own needs, this is what the behaviors would kind of show up as.
And yep,
I feel like a lot of the avatars kind of do that work also.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, you were just trying to live, you were just trying to survive, and this seemed like the way to be the safest.
Yeah. It brings a lot of compassion and patience into the process that you really need to keep going, because essentially, like, body image suffering is an adaptive strategy. Like, for something at some point along the way, it was trying to solve a problem for you. It was trying to meet an emotional need. And so it makes sense. And once you understand that you make sense, there's a lifting of that shamey, like, what's wrong with me? I must be so broken and irrational and whatever kind of mentality. And that just inviting a little more space and patience and compassion into the process is so needed, because it's really hard and it's a long process.
Totally. And I think it also is, because it's long and hard, sorry listeners, but like, because it's long and hard, but certainly not like as fucking difficult as like living in a place of like self-hatred. Like, let's talk about the path. But there is like a lot of liberation on the other side of this work, that it can almost happen invisibly. Like, it's not necessarily happening while you're doing the work, but like, for me, it kind of showed up almost like it's still showing up years after.
Yep.
You know, which I think is also really beautiful, because it's not like, it's not a quick fix, because it can't be. It was not, you know, built in a day, all of the suffering.
100%. And that's why, like, I've taken so long to get to a place. I mean, that I'm so, so happy to have the book out there so that it's like a starting point or a reference point for people being introduced to my work and my concept of body neutrality. Because like, what I was seeing before that and what I felt like I was supposed to make as a person working on the internet was like sexy, you know, like 6 weeks to loving your body and that kind of thing. And I've been pushing back against that since I started trying to figure out, how do I set realistic expectations for people about how long and how hard this work will be, while also saying and really helping them understand that it's worth it. And I think that by starting with the body image avatars, and I have like a self-assessment so that people can go through and sort of score in each category and see who they resonate with the most, it helps set that expectation. Because if you identify really strongly with one and kind of nothing in the other three, you're probably going to have a shorter, maybe a little bit more straightforward of a healing path than somebody who identifies really like scores high and identifies a lot with three or four of them. And so that's part of it too, is it helps immediately set that expectation for like, if this is a coping strategy on multiple fronts, you've got a lot of work to do. It's the same process, but it's still going to be a longer process, you know? Yeah.
It's like if you have one thread to untangle versus whether you have like
exactly,
16.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they're all connected. And I do think that there's, I was something to say. Oh, capitalism. But I think it's also worth noting, you know, that like, it's very easy to frame any of this work as like, it's a personal coping strategy, right? Like, and I do think that that's true. And I know that that was true for me at a lot of levels, but it's also like existing within a white supremacist capitalist patriarchy that like this, we are actually kind of trained, especially as, you know, people assigned female at birth, but I'm sure other humans also like, to hate our bodies, you know, like that there's a $1 billion industry. Yeah. based on that. And I think like there has been a lot said about that, but I think something that I think I read in one of your newsletters was like, who is profiting off of this? You know, like if certainly not me, because if my strategies were working, then I wouldn't be suffering.
Yeah. And I think that we give a lot of lip service to this idea, like even body positivity, you know, I mean,
well,
a decade
still, like,
ago.
As you say, make it sexy. Like as soon as it's made sexy, it can actually be bought or sold.
Totally. So I feel like we heard a lot about, you know, like the beauty industry is a however many $1 billion industry. Don't let them take your power. And sure, I mean, that is true. I'm glad that we are getting more and more, gaining more awareness of that in the public eye. But also what it doesn't speak to is the fact that we as humans are biologically wired to crave belonging, to feel like it's a life and death situation, whether or not we're being accepted, whether or not we're going to be protected by our community. So I think that it got talked about, but it was never really talked about as deeply important to us as it really is. Yeah. Because let's say you live in a fat body, you know, you can take your power back from capitalism or whatever by, you know, not participating in buying certain things, but that doesn't change the fact that you have a deep wound that you walk around the world with.
Yeah. And that society is actually like pouring salt in on a daily.
Yeah. Like. And it feels like your choices are, I either try to conform and I gain the acceptance and protection of my community, therefore I survive, or I don't, and I'm in danger, you know, of being like left behind. It really feels life or death. And I don't think that that gets talked about when, at least not previously, it was never talked about as this is a life or death situation, or at least on a primal level, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
and that the suffering actually has like a root that, you know, makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also that, because if it becomes kind of commodified, like either the wounding or the healing, that it, as soon as that starts to happen, it like somehow gets disembodied. Like it stops being a somatic process. You know, it's like it's the journey ceases to be the reward. It's only kind of like a binary goal, right? And it's very difficult to feel one's way through that process. Sorry, serious, like thinking I'm talking to her. I'm not talking to you, Siri.
something I say to clients sometimes is like, go ahead and try to meditate when you're triggered. You know, like, go ahead. I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I am going to tell you that it's going to not feel the same as when you're meditating like on vacation in this relaxed state, right? So trying to heal body image stuff when you are constantly being triggered essentially into this like primal sense of survival, it doesn't give enough validity to what's really going on a nervous system level, you know, and all of that stuff is why I was like, okay, well, we're not going to do this in a sexy, fast way, right? Like, we got to dig, because that's the thing we need to be dealing with. How do you actually move through the world feeling okay, even in a marginalized body, feeling okay when you are basically facing life or death over whether or not to wear a tank top or something, you know? I mean, that kind of stuff, like, has to be addressed and given the validity that it really has.
For sure. And I do think it's also helpful, like, you know, when we talk about body image suffering and like the level, the amount of bandwidth that that shit can take up on like the daily basis, you know, like something that I think might be because I think as a broad concept that can be, you know, obviously understood, but there's also, I think for me, when you were talking, like, I didn't know it was possible kind of prior to doing this work that, or that it was something that other people had access to, but that I would never have access to. It's just the idea that, like, you could, like, look in the mirror and be like, not a great day. Like, I feel bloated. I don't like where the line, like, where my bra marks are, like, whatever. And, like, have that not be, like, a tone setter for, like, how it not ruin your experience of life that day. You know, so which might sound super vain, right? But like, I think speaking to your idea of like that, this feel it can feel very important, even if that's where your survival method is, right?
Yes, and I think even the use of the word vain there, like that's partly why people see it as a character flaw, right? They're like, I shouldn't care about this, like, you know, it's so superficial of me. But also, when you really look at the deeper mechanisms going on, it makes total sense that this is feeling like such a big deal to you. And I call what you just said grouchy acceptance, where like in body neutrality, you do not feel nothing never, right? Like that's not the goal. That's just nothing. That's not going to happen. Instead, body neutrality is when you get to a place where you can have whatever feelings you feel, think whatever thoughts you think, and then those things don't have enough power to ruin your day. Like totally. You just move on, you let them go. Just like you might get super annoyed because something is wrong in your house, or, you know, your kid is acting or your pet is acting like a jerk today. Like whatever it might be, you can have feelings about it, but you don't then usually like stew for the rest of the week about what you're going to do about this problem, right? Like you just kind of go, that's so annoying, and move on. And that's what grouchy acceptance. You look in the mirror and you go, that's not what I would have liked to look like today. Yeah, that's not my favorite. And then you move on.
Which again, like mind blown. Cause I think like, I didn't know. I thought that also that like, you know, that there would be like a willpower aspect to it. And again, like very much kind of proximal to like a 12-step experience, that it's like, it's actually like, it's the result of a process. That's not necessarily about that thing that you're doing. Like, it's not like working on the thing specifically. It's not like fixing your body. It's fixing your relationship with your body, which I think is like an incredible skill, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And I feel like, you know, you were talking, and this is not on the question sheet, so I apologize if it's like a curveball, but like, so, you know, if it does feel kind of like activating to somebody to constantly when they're working on this stuff, because I think it can, like, how do you kind of de-escalate the level of like somatic response or like, you know, fight, flight, freeze when it comes to talking about like, living in society, like working on stuff that's so tender and can be so, you know, coded in shame.
So you're talking about like in the beginning, like before someone gets,
Or for you, like, how do you kind of assist clients and kind of like, for the person who cannot in fact like meditate when they're acting triggered, like what, how do you untrigger? Or how do you kind of work through that phase of the process?
So I will always start with a new client by giving them permission to be triggered as hell, like to get super activated, to have, you know, this sort of spiral around body image that comes up. Like I give them permission to be where they already are, because that's what you have to do. And that is initially the best thing you can do. And while it might seem counterintuitive for a body image coach to be like, your task this week is to notice that you hate your body and accept that, like, just be okay this week or however long, you know, with the fact that like, I hate how I look today. I'm really struggling over it. And that's where I'm supposed to be today. Mm. Because that starts to take the sting and the spiral and the shame out of the experience of where you literally just are. Mm-hmm. That can de-escalate it already, depending on, you know, how much judgment a person has about their suffering here. But then also depending on the person and their tool set and skills and everything, a lot of times bringing it back to like what they're feeling emotionally. It's never a good idea to have them try to replace a thought or feeling mm-hmm. or get rid of a thought or feeling. That just makes everything much more tense and shamey and stressful. So it's never like, you know, next time you're feeling bad about your body, think about your emotions instead. Like, it's not a replacement, right? But it can be useful just to bring yourself back to you when you're in that really activated state, because that activated state is about your relationship to essentially your attachment figures in the world, like your attachment community, your attachment society. So it, in bringing it back to you, sometimes there's a lot of calm in that. Even mm-hmm. if it's just like checking in, journaling, noticing, you know, whatever it might be, basically just checking in with yourself and accepting what you find there, including the fact that you are upset, anxious, you know, that you feel disgust, that you feel shame, whatever it might be. Just making space for all of it in the beginning is the most deactivating thing most people can do.
That's so awesome to hear. Like, literally was just in therapy and it was like accepting your feelings about not like not feeling great. And I was like, I hate this so fucking much.
But right.
If that's where it's at, to like, because I think a lot of what I see in myself and a lot of people who struggle with this stuff that, you know, friends I've talked to, is like, there's this tendency to like want to kind of hunker down away from it and kind of like get stuck in like not feeling the pain of the suffering experience. And that's actually like, it kind of, it's a, not even a holding pattern. It's like, it's a very stuck place to, because there's no recourse. There's no way out of that kind of like, I don't want to feel this way. So I won't feel this way. So I don't want to feel this way. So it's like horrible. Yeah.
It is. And I think it's understandable given like what we all learn both societally and usually personally around sort of the meaning we attach to our feelings, the meaning we attach to our reactions. Like, there is this idea that being uncomfortable is a problem that must be solved or a flaw that must be addressed. And therefore, when you are uncomfortable, you must be doing something wrong. So now it's not just uncomfortable. Now it's a shame spiral. Yeah. And you're like, you know what I mean? So once you start saying, I'm uncomfortable and it's okay that I'm uncomfortable right now. In fact, it's my job to be uncomfortable right now. It sort of cuts off the spiral at its legs a little bit.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And like tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you know how many fights I've gotten into with my partner that were basically me mad that I felt a way and then acting, you know what I mean? Like, if I had just felt the way and been like, hey, I'm feeling the way, we would have addressed it and it would be fine. But when I look back, I can see that I was like, I can't feel this way. Therefore, I'll do something else. And like, of course, it never works. It doesn't work. The best thing we can do to not be set off into our spirals is be like, I feel this way. I don't like it. But it's here and that's okay.
Totally. And especially because I do think like in any kind of recovery, be it from like eating disorder, body image stuff, or like drugs and alcohol, like it's, you know, obviously so the sober part of sober sex speaks to this idea of like, should, like, you know, I mean, it becomes like a little bit of a cliche, but like shitting on oneself, like feeling like I should be like farther along this journey or like act like I should know how to act like a fucking nice person and like, like behave myself and control my emotions. And in fact that like, you know, it's been very helpful to be told repeatedly, like, it's not a self-improvement program. It's a self-acceptance program. Like, but it's so gross.
It's so like tempting and delicious to judge ourselves for where we are. It's got a really strong gravitational pull. Mm. And by like doing the work to say, I'm here, I'm activated and I don't want to be, and I don't like it, but I am. And that's where I am right now. And that's okay that I am. And it's okay that I don't like it or want to be here. Like, it just instantly takes the heaviness out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot, it's like then that you can actually have the feeling and the feeling can move, as opposed to just being like, I'm not feeling this. I should feel different though. If I try hard enough, I will. Oh God.
And for what it's worth, like, this is the exact same process as the body neutrality work. Like, basically the way I see body neutrality is learning to strip away the layers of interpretation and meaning that we place on our bodies and appearance. And in order to do that, you gotta learn to strip them away from your feelings, your emotions, the signals your body sends, your personality, your strengths and weaknesses. Like, it's all of you. You really can't do this work without actually going in and doing the work to accept all of you.
But I mean, like, and again, I think as like, I'm having a very visceral response to that concept. Again, like having been kind of involved in this process for some time now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like knowing on the other side of that, like to be able to actually access like and accept and move through feelings in the body, like what a fucking gift. Like I didn't know that's what I want. I thought I at the end of this, I wanted like a, I remember crying to my boyfriend being like, I know that like I want freedom, but really I just want to be hot.
Yes, totally.
He was like, I don't know what to say.
Totally. And I feel like if you see that as an either or, and that one invalidates the other, you're screwed. Yeah, because seriously. Of course you want both those things. Like, yeah. They're both valid.
They are both valid. And also, like, if I don't get the latter, then like, can I be, you know, do I think I can actually find like peace and joy and
yeah,
something that something new in the first part, you know, just with yeah. the acceptance part.
Sometimes I think it's helpful to think about this, that like around money, because in our society, obviously having a certain amount of money is a status symbol. It's like, you know, definitely what we're taught in capitalism is like the goal, that you'll be happy and feel all the things you want to feel if you make enough money. And I think that nobody on earth who really wants to make a lot of money is ever going to just stop wanting to make a lot of money, mm-hmm. but they might be able to, if they unpack their relationship to it, get to a place where they can say, I'm not willing to do what it would take of me. It doesn't align with my values and how I want to spend my life in order to go after that money. But it doesn't mean I don't wish someone would just like, you know, I don't wish I would win the lottery or whatever it might be, right? That desire doesn't have to go away for you to find peace. And it's the same with body. You never have to stop caring about how you look or stop wanting to be hot. You just have to be able to unpack the relationship enough that your actions are aligned with your values, that you are finding the peace and joy at wherever you are, and that you're recognizing it makes sense. I still want that. I'm just not willing to do what it would take to get there.
Oh, that's such a fucking brain breaker. Like, it's such a relief to hear, because I do feel like that's kind of the space that this work has moved me into, like, more than ever in my life. And, like, I didn't know. I thought that, like, I think it's, like, it's always putting the cart before the horse. You know, you think that, like, all the money in the world or the perfect, quote-unquote, perfect body will bring you, like, the peace and joy that you so desperately seek. But in reality, it's, like, you know, over-exercising, starving myself, fucking like literally all the strategies, you know, only brought suffering. And like, even at a point where it felt like it should have been like, finally we're here. No, never.
Yeah, exactly. And the same is true of almost anything that we place an inappropriate amount of power on. Mm. Because when you've learned that one thing is the key to happiness, like pretty much it's not.
Guess what?
Pretty much it can't be. So, you know, that we have so many of those things, like marriage, perfect job, amount of money, perfect body. Like, we have so many of these things that we place a lot of power, an inappropriate amount of power into, and that gives it the power to make us miserable. So it makes sense we want those things, and it doesn't actually have the power to give us what we really want.
Truly. And again, I think it's also like kind of you spoke to at the beginning, this like often those solutions are the result of like deep wounding. Yes. It's not like, it's not just for its own sake. It's like because that you thought that this would get you the thing that would make you feel safe and happy and connected. And in fact, it's like, oops, wrong again.
Totally.
And I do wonder, because I think that there's also like this temptation to be like, and then I found body neutrality and I lived happily ever after.
Right.
Where like in reality, there's, you know, I'm finding myself in this place where kind of having moved towards that as a goal, I guess, but also like being in that process, in that journey of kind of like detaching from diet culture, that it's actually the reconstruction of value systems has been very interesting, in that, like, for instance, while I thought one of the avatars is the achiever, and I was like, definitely the achiever. This is about like wanting to perform and show my expertise and blah, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But that in fact, a lot of the self-objectifier stuff was coming up, that like my sexualizing my own body for the pleasure of others will make me safe. That was a secret thought.
Yeah, yeah.
That I did not want to identify with, but definitely do. And I wonder kind of like what's happening now is that, and I wonder if this was part of your experience and also maybe part of your gender journey, is that as I've kind of detached my body from being for the male gaze, that like it's actually really kind of disrupted my relationship with my own sexuality, because yeah. I'm like, well, now what turns, like I thought I was turned on, but really I was just excited to be validated.
Oh yeah.
And so like now I'm like, now where do I find like the erotic in my life, because it's not that anymore, you know? Yeah. What happened then, now what?
So yes, I definitely relate to that personally. Also, when I first started dating women, I'm bisexual, and I was like, okay, I had only ever dated men, and I was like, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna be brave, and I'm gonna go try. And when I was living in LA, that was sort of like the thing that I was working on. And I expected it to be challenging in a variety of ways. I did not expect it to sort of feel like the complete and total collapse of my identity as a person in the romantic and sexual space. That is, however, what happened, because of exactly what you're saying. Like, I did not know how many of my reactions, turn-ons, patterns, desires, feelings, I did not know how many of them were created within the male gaze context, because I had unpacked that enough that I thought I knew myself, but I only knew myself in that context. And so to step out of that context and really feel like, okay, well, you know, here's a dynamic with this woman in front of me where I'm not afraid of power dynamics going one way. Like, I'm not protecting myself against being, you know, manipulated or whatever it is, my baggage with men. And also I am trying to step into a place where I feel more like a fully expansive person rather than playing a particular gender role in that dynamic. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of baggage with men. I had a lot of self-protective mechanisms in play that I didn't even know about. Definitely, I was so aware of power dynamics. And so when I was in front of a woman and none of those existed, I literally would like search myself and be like, I don't even know what I want. I don't know what you want. I'm not like versed in sort of playing to or against what you want, nor do I want to, because I don't feel scared of you. So like literally what is going on? It was so challenging. And I would say that I really fell apart for a while. It was like way harder than I expected. And then all my queer friends are like, oh, isn't it the best? I'm like, yeah, the best and maybe the hardest. Like,
oh my God. Yeah. That kind of feels like that, even though I haven't started my bisexual journey. Yes. It's just like in the context of being a like even a cishet person, like after doing this work, it's been so kind of confusing. Or I guess in the process of doing this work, it's been so confusing to kind of be dismantled in a way where you're like, wait, like if my body isn't the only currency I have, like I really liked, you talk a lot about this idea of like, what if my body wasn't the most interesting thing about me?
Yeah. Like,
and in fact, like deprioritizing that is like the thing that I need to kind of, I don't know, my currency in the world, right?
Yeah, it definitely screwed with my head. I will also say that I grew up upstate New York in a really rural conservative area with like, you know, a Republican family. And so I had way more like queer and transphobia internalized in myself than I realized. Mm. And I'm still unpacking it. I mean, there's still like stuff I run into pretty recently. Actually, I realized that even though I came out to my family, I was not correcting their pronouns. I was not taking up space. Mm. And a big part of the reason for that is I had learned, you know, it was sort of the like, it's all well and good, just keep it out of our face kind of mentality, you know? Like, it was like, it's okay to be you as long as you don't let it take up any space that bothers us, right? So it's challenging. And I would say that I wouldn't be here doing this work on gender sexuality if it weren't for the body neutrality work, because I could not have given up the privilege of the sort of like femme self-objectifying identity until I did, you know, and through the body neutrality work, it really opened up a lot of space for me, I think, to be like, okay, well, if I'm not playing to the male gaze and I don't have to uphold certain ideals to feel safe in the world and to get my needs met, then who do I want to be? And so the next question started around, like literally, it's like cliff diving. My next questions were like almost immediately around sexuality and gender. And I'm so grateful for that. It is also a whole other mountain to climb.
For sure. And I do wonder, like, I wonder if a similar process works in that context or like what, you know, like if one kind of like transfers the question, and this might, you might not have the answer to this right now, but like, or yet or ever, but like, so what if I do kind of ask like, well, what is this, like, who is this for? Or like, what am I protecting? Or like, what does this mechanism serve? Right. And of course it's like, it serves me like holding my identity together. But I do wonder like, so what has been your kind of experience in dismantling like that? Like, it sounds like really uncomfortable, but then what happened?
Good question. I think I'm still in it around gender and gender identity and expression for sure. And my partner and I are, we have an open relationship. And so there's also new dynamics at play around, being polyamorous and like literally what holds a relationship together, if not sexual exclusivity, which is this very validating thing when you've been taught your power and value as a femme identified person comes from your like desirability. Okay, well, what if that's not exclusive? So I feel like it brings up a lot more interesting questions now than they used to be. Yeah. But there's still, I mean, I'm a person who I feel like I'll always be working on something. I don't know what happens after this, but like, yeah, I enjoy being in that growth space. I enjoy challenging and unpacking things. So it's like each layer, once it becomes sort of healed or comfortable or whatever, I don't like spend a lot of time ruminating and being like, oh, like now I'm free and I don't have to think about that thing. It's just sort of like, yeah, on to the next. What new interesting question lives here?
That's rad. That's such a helpful way to frame it, because I do think that there can be a lot of fear at the like the next chapter kind of revealing itself, and you're just like, oh, fuck, like not you again. Like, gotta grow. Ah! Yeah. Do you feel at all comfortable about talking about your relationship? So I'm curious, like, how did that kind of evolve in your relationship? And also, I think a big question, obviously, whatever we talk about open relationships or poly relationships, is like, what do you do with jealousy? Like, how do you kind of process that, and how do you work through it? Or
so
what do you do?
I will say that my partner and I met before the pandemic, like just a few months before the pandemic, though. And so I had said, because this was something I really wanted, and I was dating, like I said, mostly women at the time. And I didn't imagine I would get back into a partnership with a man or sort of male looking person, which my partner identifies a little bit more on the non-binary side, but he presents very masculine. And so I still get all my triggers all triggered. Like it's not fair to him. And I know that, but it still happens.
And just to say, like, I think the last time we spoke was like in the kind of beginning, like maybe like 6 months to a year within your like love story. And so it's really beautiful to kind of hear that y'all are, you know, like are building something that feels really special. And so thank you for like giving us the update.
So basically I had said, I want an open relationship. In part, a really big part was because I had only just been exploring my sexuality for like a year. And I was like, I don't want to just, you know, slam the brakes on that and have it be like, that's it. I chose. And now that's off the table. So it was really important to me. But then as soon as the pandemic hit, it was like, okay, well, nobody's dating anybody. Nobody's going near anybody. Right. So we just sort of became a monogamous relationship out of, first in the beginning, it was like, I didn't want to spend any time with anyone else. And then it was pandemic. So we started opening it up as the pandemic was opening up, in just really small ways. And I feel like it was my idea. I definitely imagined that I would be the one leading us in this progressive way and just being so cool about it. Let me tell you what I imagined, that it would be easy for me. It would feel really natural. But actually, Drew has taken to it way easier than me. He does a lot of internal work around jealousy and compersion. Compersion being feeling pleasure at someone else's pleasure and joy at someone else's joy instead of jealousy that they're having it in and it's not with you. And and I have struggled, which is sort of embarrassing. But, you know, whatever. I accept where I am. And so basically where we're at now is like, he is super supportive whenever I have like a date or, you know, whatever experience that feels expansive for me. He certainly has feelings about it and we talk about it, but he doesn't really shut down the way that I do when he has an expansive opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so when I shut down, I'm fully aware that it is my nervous system doing a thing. I don't want it to be doing that thing, but it is. And at first mm-hmm. he would be like, really feels like you don't want me to do this. And I would just be like in my shutdown state, like, I think you should. And also, fuck this. Like it was really, and it still is sometimes like, you know, each new experience, each new thing that we process, I watch my nervous system go through an old ass pattern around like, well, I guess I have no value, you know, like, and I don't feel that way, not really, but it comes up and it shuts me down. It makes me really hard to communicate with, and it's a bummer, but it's also just what's there. And I keep telling him like my values, like one of my values, I want to keep moving through this because I don't want to have this kind of reaction. I don't believe in it. Mm-hmm. I don't stand for the values of like exclusivity or, you know, like any of the things around monogamy that feel really wrong to me. I don't want my nervous system to keep us from going to that place. And so it's been a slow process of sort of like opportunity, processing, you know, reconnection, and then like moving on. And I'm still in it, you know, and we maybe will be forever, but it's not like we've come to a place of like, this is the way we work. It's like, we're still exploring each new thing to see what we like, what we want, what feels exciting and expansive, what feels like, and I'll just give you an example. In the beginning, I was like, oh, this will be really fun. It sounds very hot to both of us for me to go have like a sort of fabulously slutty, like one night stand. But when I'm on the apps, a one night stand opportunity is pretty much only with a guy. And that I'm not attracted to that anymore. Like men can be attractive, but the kind of man that I would be going for in a like, let's set up a date tonight and do this thing, like not so much. So it was kind of all of this work of like, oh, well, I guess I don't want that. You know, like I really want to want that, but that's not what's going to work for me. In order to get really turned on, I have to actually feel connected to the person. And so, you know, and setting up dates with women, I've had so many women just like flake or bail or disappear. And so it's a different landscape. I can't necessarily. And so, yeah, each way we'd be like, okay, throw the whole plan out. Let's start over. Now what? Like it's been interesting. I will say that.
Well, and I do think there's also like, and we talk about it kind of frequently on the show, but this idea of like bi erasure that like, that it's societally like not supported, especially on the apps or whatever, to be like, oh, like you're just like, I think like you were talking about like internalized like queerphobic or transphobic feelings, like that's still a lot of places. And so to kind of like be in an exploratory space, like even if you're feeling really good about it, jazzed, if you will, that like you got, the rest of the world is not perhaps there, you know, so you have to find a kind of specific.
So I will
situation.
Say that I had always said from the beginning that my ideal was I have a boyfriend and a girlfriend. It was like this very cute little binary fantasy that I had. And once
you're like, and I am non-binary.
But I started dating a woman for a while, and it definitely was not like hookup-y. It was like really, you know, emotionally invested. And this thing that I'd always imagined would be so fun and lovely and restorative to me was heavy and exhausting. And I was like, I can't have two different people whose feelings I care about and like do all of this work. And so even that, it was like, I had always imagined that would be the easy thing, but I had to kind of throw that out too and say, at least not right now, am I ready for two real partners? Like that's, I always thought that that would be sort of the win, the easy, wonderful, expansive thing. Yes. And the bandwidth, like to have all the conversations you need to have to make sure everyone's really being taken care of, it's a lot. And so, you know, each little thing, like I said, along the way, it's just sort of been like, okay, let's talk about what we want to try next, you know? And yeah, it's been really cool and interesting.
That's really exciting. I mean, I also feel like I tend to kind of get stuck on the, like, the nervous system shutdown part, because it can be so difficult to, like, differentiate between, like, how do I violate my own consent? And I think, you know, your work reminds me a lot of, or, like, not reminds me a lot of, but I think works really well with that of friend of show, consent wizard, Mia Schachter. And if you're not aware of their work, they're so awesome. And I think y'all would get along. But this idea of, like, how to differentiate between my nervous system kind of being fucking way. And, like, my goals being like, but I'd love to be this kind of person without kind of doing that thing that we were talking about in the beginning, which is, like, I don't know, like, wishing I was somewhere I'm not. Like, how do you kind of navigate the process of, like, honoring your present feelings in the moment and also, like, not kind of believing the hype, you know, if it's against what your true goals or values are?
I mean, I don't know how anyone else does it, but...
it's really the hardest question.
I will say that I think it requires an absolute shit ton of vulnerability, which is something that I used to think I was great at. And I think that this whole exploration of gender and sexuality and stuff have shown me where it's like I was always willing to be vulnerable in partnership because I knew I had the upper hand with some guy who loved me more, for lack of a better term, right? Like basically someone who I was willing to lose. And so I would be like, this is my boundary, like honor it or don't, and I'm out, you know? And with Drew, I'm not willing to do that. And so it feels like I have had to really explore what it looks like to be vulnerable in a totally different way since being with him, because instead of, you know, the sort of nervous system impulse to burn it all down and like lash out and all of those things that live in me, but I have never been so invested in making the thing work now I have to find my way through whatever's coming up. Usually I'll voice it. I'll say, I have the urge to like burn it down right now. Like that's what's coming up. I want to hurt you. I want to make you pay. Like that's what's coming up. And he knows. I mean, we talk about all this stuff. So it's like, just because I'm feeling it doesn't mean that there's anything real behind it other than fear, like panic, shame sometimes, like whatever it is, nervous system stuff. And so now I basically try to voice that and then say that what I'm seeking is comfort and security. And if he can do that, then generally speaking, like within a few minutes, I will be able to say the more expansive thing. I can access that part of myself again, you know? So it's more about needing to feel secure and loved and safe than it is about jealousy, you know? Like the jealousy feeling and the I'm unsafe feeling are like hand in hand, at least in my experience. And so instead of being like, I'm jealous, you need to do something about it, it's more like, I'm freaking out, I need some comfort and care and security. And then once that's offered, and it is always offered, then on the other side, I can be like, cool, I'm actually excited for you about this thing. I am still gonna freak out because that's what's gonna happen. But like that stuff starts to come back when my body grounds. When usually comfort for me usually looks like being held, being touched, being like talked to softly, eye contact, all those things.
Yeah. I mean, that's so helpful because I think there's also, you know, kind of there can be, or I've perhaps in the past, I'll speak for myself, I've misunderstood in the past, like as somebody who would prefer to have no needs. And also a mind reader who can tell what they are without me having to voice them. But this idea of like, thinking that my feelings are my responsibility and that's actually like not a very connective place to come from, especially when you're like in a
That's what I was saying before about like fights that start when I'm like, okay, so I'm triggered, but I'm not allowed to be triggered because this was my idea, you know, or whatever. Like those are the moments that set off some bad shit between us. Whereas if I'm like, I'm triggered, I just want to tell you I'm triggered and I'm really needing comfort right now, even though I recognize that like you are also freaked out. If you could comfort me, I can comfort you after, you know, like that's really where it lives, to come back to a place that's not going to be a fight. It's just going to be like a hard conversation.
Yeah. And also that like, there's actually not a conflict.
Yeah. Cause there. We both want the same thing.
Right.
And he will always point that out to me. He's like, do you think that we are actually on opposing sides right now? And I'm like, no, like just because there's a part of my brain that's telling me like, you know, to run out into the street screaming, like, no, I think we both want the same thing.
And then
get your car.
You can't go on your date. You have no tires.
Yeah, and even I would say even recently, like the thing that jumped to mind unbidden while he was talking about something with this girl was like, fuck her. I like her. I actually like her. So like for that to be the thing that I'm like suddenly like, fuck that girl. Like that is so very indicative of this, you know, sort of like primal reaction versus higher self values based reaction.
Yeah, but I think also the way in which you kind of like hold space and compassion for the primal part of yourself,
it's
just like having like outlandish
reactions.
You have
to. And also it really helps me when he says it. Like if he says, well, first of all, anybody trying to hide anything, it's always going to come out, right? Like you feel it, even if it's not being said, you know something's wrong. And that feels terrible for everyone. But if he says something that's like intended to be, you know, something a little more like higher self-driven and doesn't voice the primal thing, I still feel sticky. Like I feel like something hasn't been said, or you know what I mean? And so then even though he's giving me like the words I want, I don't feel like free and okay. Whereas if he's like, I feel like killing that guy, and I, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's very liberating to be like, let me voice my lower self for a minute. Because that brings...
And still be loved, I think, is also like the
it brings all of you into the conversation. And that's, I think, what makes people feel safe.
For sure. And also, again, like that you're able to really see each other in the kind of like compassionately, even if it's like, I totally wish you were like actually fine with this, but like, I prefer you not being fine with it and letting me know.
Exactly.
Because then at least you're like dealing with reality as opposed to like a fucking projected bullshit.
And the same is true with body image. Like it's the same freaking process. If you're like, okay, I hate how I look, I'm freaking out. And you're like, oh, people are going to judge me. I need to lose weight. I'm going to think about dieting. I should blah, blah, blah. Like if you're in that story, there's no answer. Whereas if you're in the story of like, I feel shame right now, or I feel not good enough. Like even though it's still really uncomfortable, there's peace. Because you're dealing with a real thing, which means there's actually something that you can do with it. And you're not on this stupid wild goose chase of like some other invented story. And I think a lot of jealousy in poly spaces is that you're dealing with the story. You know, because it's tempting to be like, well, you did this. Like you're in the story of the jealousy, not the pain of like, I feel insecure right now.
Yeah.
I am freaking out.
Fuck out. Like either way. And I think, that's what a beautiful kind of invitation. Listeners, be with your freak out. but I mean, I do think like, as somebody who's kind of in doing that right now and it's fucking uncomfortable, but the beautiful part is, and I think this is hard. This is like a hard sell because everyone's like, I don't care about that. Like it, in the body, it feels amazing to just like be it with does. What is. Even if it's not a great time, this like dropping in of being like, oh, then at least I can kind of conceive that it's going to be okay. As opposed to like, as you said, like be obsessed with a story or a solution or like a plot to like feel differently.
Or even a power dynamic. Cause I think a lot of times what I will go to first is defensive. And that defensive basically is like, it's ego trying to maintain the upper hand, even though what we both want is, you know, to come back together and reconnect, right? So like it has the opposite effect of anything useful for me. And so I think a lot of the work that I've been doing the last few years is identifying when I get defensive, recognizing it for what it is, and then dropping it and going to the thing underneath. Because the thing underneath is always the dropping into the body real emotions. You know, like I'm hurt. Like that's, I'm scared.
I'm scared. I'm always scared.
Yes, I know.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Cause I think it's also can be very validating to be like, oh, the work is not in a vacuum. And actually like people are trying to live in this way and not just kind of perform like goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, to be the journey to being able to like love the most kind of grotesque parts of oneself, which, you know, doesn't sound very like, I don't know, new, like, when I think of body neutrality, I that's not the first thing I go to, but I do think that they're like, that is the fucking journey. And like, what a fucking gift. Like there is, again, there is liberation on the other side and it feels really fucking good.
It does.
And so like, I wonder kind of, you know, you made this amazing thing. You made this book.
Thanks.
Congratulations. What is next for you? And like, what are you inspired by right now?
Oh gosh. I don't know what's next. I think that I was so like focused on the book coming out that I have not given myself any space to think about what's next. So now that it's been out in the world for like a month, I basically am just chilling. I don't really have like a plan. I am traveling quite a bit this summer, which is entirely for the purposes of like doing fun things in different cities and visiting people I haven't seen since before the pandemic. And also any book promotion and opportunities wherever I go is like kind of, you know, sort of rolled into it. But I don't know yet. And I have talked to my agent about writing a second book and she basically is like, yeah, whatever you want, we'll pitch it. But I don't know yet. I don't have like I'm giving myself time and space to just like readjust, I think. And I would love to write another book. I just, I don't know yet what feels like the thing I could spend the next couple of years obsessing over.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, and also I'm curious as like what that felt like. Cause I know that like for me, and I talk about this because we have a lot of authors on, but like releasing an album, I felt a lot of like surprise grief when it kind of was in the world, just because it was like, oh, it's not mine anymore. There's like nothing left to do. Now it's like for everybody. It's not my like little baby. And I'm curious kind of what the process of like the actual.
I felt exactly thing, like, the opposite. I was like, get this baby away from me. Like, I think the hardest part was the couple of months leading up to it, because at that point I wrote it in isolation. I had been talking about it and editing it. And it felt like I had this stupid secret that I just wanted out in the world and I didn't want it to be mine anymore. And so like the day it came out, I felt a million pounds lifted off my shoulders and I was just so excited for it to be not mine anymore. Awesome. Like take it
in the world. Yeah. You can move on with your life.
Exactly.
Oh, ecstatic. Yeah. Then
it's been great. Well, yeah. To have it. And to like finally hear people talking about these ideas that I've been living in for so long, you know?
Oh my God. I mean, especially cause I do think that like, since you've been in the process of writing it, like body neutral is now like a watchword. Like people are like, it's a larger conversation than the one that you were having like on your Instagram and in your newsletter and in the podcast, which must feel exciting, but also kind of like, I don't know, is it disconcerting? Are you like, do you feel any like proprietary, this is
no, or are you just like, I'm like, good. Let's make it a buzzword. Let's make it like, I will say that it's a little annoying because I joined TikTok and I feel like there's
well, that in itself.
There's a lot on TikTok because it's a much bigger buzzword on TikTok than it is on Instagram, body neutrality. And I feel like on TikTok, there's a lot of misinterpretations, like a lot of people out there talking about it in a way that I just don't agree with. So that's a little annoying because I'm like, am I going to have to start defending this word and be like, society made it one thing. Do I need a whole new term to make it this thing? But I am hoping that as the book continues to sell and everything, that my definition will at least be a part of that main definition, because right now there's stuff that I'm like, not only don't agree with or doesn't feel complete, but I'm actually like, oh, I don't want to be aligned with that. So there's only a little bit of concern that it could take on a meaning that would go a direction that I don't feel aligned with. Yeah.
You don't agree with. Well, good thing that you literally wrote the book on it. If only people like fucking read books, it's just going on TikTok and running their mouths anyway. So to close out, we're going to do a very swift and fun and light and joyful Great. Lightning round. What is your favorite way to play?
It at all? Movement, probably. I have a one wheel. That's my most recent little joyful play.
Well, one wheel is like the hoverboard.
Yeah, it's like a sideways. It's like got one wheel and it's like a skateboard, but it's electronic.
Oh, cool. So not the
unicycle one.
Not
no.
like the Segway. Like a skateboard, much cooler. What is the best thing you've watched, read, or listened to recently?
I have such a recency bias for these things. I'm watching Suits right now, which is like not in any way the best of anything, but it is pretty entertaining. I would say the second season of The Bear was really amazing.
Excellent. Yeah. You're not the first person to feel this way, and awesome. I can't wait. I live in France, so I have to figure out a VPN situation, but it's okay. What turns you on? And that can be like creatively, intellectually, physically, sexually.
Yeah. Authenticity, transparency, like absolute wholeness of self and expression in others and in myself.
Oh, I love that. And like, I think we touched into this a little bit, but like, do you have a kind of practice or a number of steps that you ground in when you are feeling freaked out?
It really depends on what freaked me out. A lot of what freaks me out, well, that's the thing, right? Like if it were a spider, then yeah, I have a lot of somatic practices that are like self-regulation. But I feel like because most of the things that have freaked me out in the last few years are relational, then my practices are about like ego checking, identifying defensiveness, dropping my walls, being vulnerable, and then inviting my partner into whatever I need. Yeah.
Oh. And finally, what do you love?
Oh my gosh. I love people. I love people. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
Awesome. Well, it has been such a pleasure to catch up with you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Thank you
this
so
was
much
awesome.
For this conversation. And for the book, like everybody, where can they
sure.
find you if they want to find
so
you?
So the book is called Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues. You can buy it literally anywhere you buy books, audiobooks, or digital books. I recommend, if you can, buying from a local bookstore because let's keep them alive and not give Amazon our money. However, wherever you want to buy them, you can buy it. And you can find me at jessienealon.com. I have a coaching page. I have a blog. You can find me on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube at Jessie Nealand. Yeah.
Fantastic. And listen to the podcast. If you're listening to a podcast, you'll probably like to listen to other podcasts. So check about This Is Not About Your
Definitely.
Body.
Definitely.
Creativity, authenticity, body autonomy, mental health, sexuality, gender identity. Recovery, got it, spiritual growth. Sober, sex, all of this and more. Sober, sex, you'll never get bored. Sober, sex, all of this and more. Sober, sex, we're never ever bored. Creativity, authenticity, body autonomy, mental health, sexuality, gender identity. Recovery, got it, spiritual growth.